Hey there, it's time for VoiceOver Body Shop, and our guest this week is David Arrigo Jr., the voice of Ferb. Yeah, he's there, honestly. Anyway, we got lots of cool stuff to talk about. If you've got a question for David, throw it in the Facebook chat room. I know Jeff Holman is sitting in there waiting with bated breath, whatever the heck that means, to write down your question and get it to us so we can ask him a little bit later on in the show. But we got great stuff tonight. So stay tuned for VoiceOver Body Shop coming up right now.
From the outer reaches, they came, bearing the knowledge of what it takes to properly record your voiceover audio. And together, from the center of the VO universe, they bring it to you now. George Whittem, the engineer to the VO stars, a Virginia Tech grad with the skills to build, set up, and maintain the professional VO studios of the biggest names in VO today. And you, Dan Leonard, the voiceover home studio master, a professional voice talent with the knowledge and experience to help you create a professional sounding home VO studio. And each week, they allow you into their world, bringing you talks with the biggest names in the voiceover world today, letting you ask your questions, and giving you the latest information to make the most of your voiceover business. Welcome to VoiceOver Body Shop.
VoiceOver Body Shop is brought to you by VoiceOverEssentials.com, home of Harlan Hogan signature products, Source Elements, remote studio connections for everyone, VoiceActorWebsites.com, where your VO website isn't a pain in the butt. VOHeroes.com, become a hero to your clients with award-winning voiceover training. JMC Demos, when quality matters. And VoiceOver Extra, your daily resource for VO success.
And now, live to drive from their super secret clubhouse and studio in Sherman Oaks, California, here are the guys.
Hey, hi there. I'm Dan Leonard.
I'm George Whittem.
And this is VoiceOver
Body Shop.
Or VO
BS.
We miss the crowd. We miss having a studio full of people yelling BS. You know, but
what are we going to do? But we do. Is there a dog in there at least that we could get?
No. Mishka and Ari went back in the house. So.
All right.
Yeah. Anyway. No, so it's good to be back live with you guys. And George, it's good to have you home. You were off in the outback somewhere.
Yep, breaking all the rules. Don't go traveling during COVID. Actually, the secret is the best time to travel.
Yeah, well, good.
We had a great time. Went up, took a little, flew to Salt Lake, and then did a big loop up through Yellowstone and back again.
Yeah.
And we saw a bison.
Wow.
And thousands of bison. And we got, there's a picture of one I took. No, that is not from a website. I actually took that with my, actually with a camera I borrowed from a good friend. I put a post online saying, anybody want to send their camera to Yellowstone and I'll take pictures with it. And somebody actually lent me theirs.
Very
so
nice.
I had a real camera.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was magical being there in summer, having it go from 90 to 25 in a day.
Whoa.
And snow was shocking and interesting, and it was really cool. If you're going to go to Yellowstone, it's a great time to go.
And this is mind blowing.
I think that it's part of the Grand Prismatic Spring area. And it's just, yeah, it's a gurgling, steaming, living, it's the most bizarre park. And it's one that makes you want to come back because things move around. You know, you come back in 5 years, that thing that was going off might be dead and something else is happening the next time because things are constantly changing. And really remarkable place. My girlfriend Firza, she lives here. She came here from Iran 8 years ago. It was the one place she knew she wanted to go someday before even getting to the US. And we finally got to go and it was awesome.
I guess it's all downhill from here then.
Yeah, well, that's it. Yeah. She'll have to go to Yosemite for a fourth time.
Oh,
She's been there three times and I haven't been there yet.
Yeah, it's amazing what we have here in this country. You can go in and visit there. Anyway, we have a great guest for ourselves tonight. If you're a fan of Phineas and Ferb, which believe it or not, I am because my kids watch that stuff, you know, they're
by proxy or really, really a fan, Dan?
I thought it was cute. I thought it was well written. But a movie just came out recently, and the guy that's playing Ferb is our guest, David Arrigo Jr. David, welcome to the show. Welcome to VoiceOver Body Shop.
Thanks for having me.
Great to have you in here. And I haven't seen it yet, so don't be a spoiler or anything.
I will not ruin anything except to say that it is awesome.
I would hope so. So you've had a very interesting career. Now you arrived in the voiceover world after a very successful early career in New York City. How did you start in showbiz, and what have you
done? I actually started in showbiz after a concert that I went to with my dad when I was a kid. I went to a Springsteen concert with my dad, who's from New Jersey. And I'm pretty sure if you don't like Springsteen and you're from New Jersey, they don't let you come home.
Which tour was that? Was that the Born in the USA tour?
I can't remember. I was 12 or so, 13 okay. maybe. All right. And I looked at my dad's face, and he had this big grin on his face. And I literally that day said, that's what I want to do for people. And that shifted all of my focus. I thought I wanted to be a comic book artist when I was a kid, stuff like that. But when school started up in the fall, I started taking choir, drama, whatever I could, so that I could develop those skills. Got a degree in theater from the University of Montana in Missoula. And then I just was pursuing musical theater like gangbusters, did some summer stock, did some regional theater down in Arizona right after school. For a couple of years, and then moved to New York, and I was fortunate enough to work for Disney Cruise Line and do some off-Broadway stuff, some off-off stuff. Never did break that Broadway thing, but always had fun auditions, and eventually that all sort of led me to a manager, and that manager got me a meeting with Paradigm Agency for on-camera commercial stuff. And after talking to Doug, their on-camera agent, for like 45 minutes and talking to him about how much I loved doing Avenue Q regionally and things like that, doing the voices, he was like, just come with me. And he sort of took me by the shoulders and walked me over to the other side of the office to a guy named Matt Smith and sat me down and said, you guys talk. And they sort of picked me up as a sort of freelancing client or a hip pocket client. And I started getting these auditions and I was like, this is cool. And that got me involved in picking up a mic so that I could rehearse at home and try and do stuff and learn and listen to Talkin' Tunes podcast and VO Buzz Weekly and go to D. Bradley Baker's website, iwantabeavoiceactor.com, and pick up Tara Platt and Yuri Lowenthal's book, Voice Over Voice Actor. I like that book so much that I'm actually a testimonial in the second edition. I just took all of that information and was like, get in my brain, and started pushing directly toward voiceover, because through that, I wound up with an audition for an animated feature that was a dubbing project. And I just woke up that day smiling, took the subway grinning, did the audition beaming, left glowing. And I got on the phone with my dad, once again, talking to my dad. And I said, I think I found the thing I'm supposed to be doing. And wow, sorry, there's some very loud noises bowling near where I am.
Maybe the next door is making a steel drum. One of those. Exactly.
I think I found the thing I'm supposed to be doing. And I was able to look backwards too and find that, like, I was spending all of my money that was sort of discretionary income on figuring this thing out. And I wasn't spending anything on dance classes or voice lessons for singing or any of the acting stuff for theater. It was all voiceover centric. And I was like, if I follow where I'm spending my money, it is very clear that this is what I want to do. That just got me in the door. I did a lot of dubbing stuff in New York because that's a lot of what's available out there. Not a lot of original animation. There's a fair amount of commercial stuff, promo, all that. But I mean, promo, as you guys know, is so possible to do pretty much anywhere if you've got the right gig.
Yeah, still a small cadre of people who really dominate that part.
Right.
Yeah. So.
So, having listened to Talkin' Tunes, having listened to VO Buzz Weekly, I said, I gotta move to LA. And luckily, my wife was like, yeah, I don't mind moving to LA. And she's a personal chef who specializes in vegan and vegetarian cooking. Oh, so
sounds like a good move.
Yeah.
This is a fine place for her to be.
Which that is not what she sounds like, by the way.
Is that your Schitt's Creek voice? Who's the guy on Schitt's Creek, man?
Ew, like- David. Ew.
David, yeah,
yeah, we definitely like to watch the show, and congratulations, Annie, on your Emmy.
Exactly. Awesome, man.
Yeah. So when did you come out here?
So we moved out here in the fall of 2016. I was lucky enough to sign with SBV Talent, who were my ideal agency, a wonderful woman named Mary McDonald Lewis, who has been in the industry for a while, gave me a great reference to them. And they picked me up in December of 17, and I've stayed with them because I love them.
That helps if you love your agency.
It does. It really does. I trust them implicitly. And, you know, I think that that's very important when you're an actor as well, is to have that relationship where if you feel like you can communicate with your representation, and I totally feel like I can communicate with my representation, that is really awesome, as opposed to being afraid to reach out.
Yeah, that's great. If you're just joining us, where have you been? Our guest is David Arrigo Jr., who's currently starring as the voice of Ferb, who doesn't really say a whole lot in the new Phineas and Ferb movie, and he's been
part of the irony about loving the role.
Makes it easy, I suppose. But if you've got a question for him, throw it in the Facebook chat room where Jeff Holdman is standing by, and we'll get that question to him in a little bit. But as you listen to him, you're going to go, I want to know more about this. I want to know about how he did this. Well, which is why I get to ask these questions as well. Like, now, you've done a fair amount of animation work. I see you're in Detective Pikachu.
And I was Cubone, yes.
Yeah, and a number of other things. Now, did your agency say, you know, you're good at this and we're going to push you? Or did you say, I want to do this and you're going to find this for me? How did that all work?
I actually think there was a little bit of skepticism about me doing animation initially, because you got to think about it logically. For an agency to sort of break someone who's relatively unknown into animation, that's a lot harder work than to get somebody into commercial stuff, right? Because the turnover is just not the same. The opportunity for things to come along in commercial, not a campaign per se, but even just a one-off, right? Like, how often do you hear the same customer on that McDonald's commercial? Mm. Pretty rare. Yeah. You get the same announcer, maybe, but, you know, the person who's like, hey, is that the new Quarter Pounder with cheese? That person rotates, or it's so much easier to think that you can make money off of someone with commercial or with someone. I don't want to make the agencies sound predatory with commercials than it is with animation, right? Because there are so many incredibly talented people in the business who are able to do not just one voice, not just five voices, not just 20 voices. So if you develop a relationship with those people, why wouldn't you want to keep using them? So there was a little bit of, I think, we'll take him on and we'll see if it works for animation. But I made sure too that I expressed to them that this was not short game for me. Mm-hmm. That if they took me on, I will do what they tell me in terms of how do I meet people and improve my skills in this arena. But, you know, as I said, I think in the meeting, I didn't move here to cater. So what I will do is as much work as I can to make this happen. And fortunately, a couple of things broke relatively early on, and commercial was the first thing that I booked from them. It was like 2 months after I signed with them, I got this really great campaign for Cox Communications. And went into Bell Sound or Bell Studios. Is it Bell Sound? I think it's Bell Sound. And did 11 TV commercials in one afternoon. And that was the first thing I booked through SBV. And I was like, I like it here.
Yeah, that's always fun when they're like, by the way, can you do this one? And they start handing out the scripts and like, yeah, I could do this one.
Oh my gosh. That makes you want to stick around.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and I think it also, it really did help me that I had the information from the podcasts and things like that. I wound up having a conversation with one of my agents over drinks at a bar near the agency. And one of the things he said was, we were so surprised that someone so new to town had the insights into the industry that you had in our meeting. We didn't know how you knew certain things. But what that showed us was that you had an investment in the career and in the field and in the history of it too. Right. I think it's so important to have a reverence for what came before so that you can also sort of know a little bit more of what's going to come. And I'm not saying that it makes you psychic, but you have access to trends and you can sort of accept that things come in cycles, right? Because you've seen it. And what do they say? Knowing is half the battle.
Right.
I also like to just mine from what I heard ages ago. Well, oh, this worked. This worked really well. That kind of character was really popular for a while, but it's kind of fallen out of fashion right now, or has for the last decade or so. Maybe I can bring a tweaked version of that and capitalize because nobody's doing it. Yeah. I know it works. I know it has worked. Can I make it new again?
Yeah. Yeah. It's fascinating how, you know, a lot of people think, oh, I can get into animation. I can do funny voices, but it's not about doing funny voices. It's about having, you know, being able to move characters and change who they are by changing tone and things like that. And then being able to maintain that.
Sustain it.
Yeah. Right?
Well, and beyond that too, sort of a dirty little secret. You don't really have to sound all that different. You have to sound like you think differently. Right. That is so much more important than like, I can make my voice sound like this. Oh, but that guy has to sound like he thinks differently from the guy who says, I can make my voice sound like this. When I would go into the agency to do my auditions, I would often ask our engineer, hey, did those guys sound like they had different worldviews? Do they sound like they thought differently? Which, shout out to you, Yvonne. I hope you're catching this, and I miss you. And she was always very forthcoming and would let me know if they did or if they didn't, because that's more important, right? You can make two guys that sound exactly like me think completely differently, and you've got really great takes. Look at somebody like Lorenzo Music, right?
Yeah.
How much did he make use of essentially one sound?
Yeah. That's right. Now, this is Carlton, your doorman. Yep. know that one well. So you got this role. Somebody else was playing Ferb before. How did you get thrown into doing this somewhat quiet character who just is more like turning his head and stuff like that?
Right. Well, actually, that's one of my favorite things. He always said, because like early on, people were like, you don't talk much. Well, actually, and then they would just continue with the conversation and he kind of just got like, and then it, you know, obviously became that he was this sort of cool philosopher kind of guy. But when Dan and Swampy created another show called Milo Murphy's Law, they always had this idea that it was taking place in Danville, which is where Phineas and Ferb lived. So they always had a mind or an eye toward having a crossover episode. And when it came time to do that at the top of season two, they asked the cast back, and I'm not sure exactly why Thomas didn't return. I don't know if it was because he was busy or not interested. I have legitimately no idea. I'm sorry that I can't spill the tea there. So what they did was they said, okay, well, we got to figure this out because you got to have a Ferb voice. And they sent out the auditions. SBV sent it to me, took a listen, regurgitated the sample to the best of my ability, had my wife listen to it. And she said, well, if you don't get this one, I'm really confused about what your job is. So I was like, okay, I will take that as
a weird
sign.
Vote of confidence, but
and I did another round of auditions after submitting it a couple weeks later, and they hired me. And one of my favorite stories about that day is walking in and Dan Povenmire going, "Wait, before you say anything, are you from England? We all think you are, except Swampy." Mm. who lived in England for a long time. And I said, oh, no, I'm from North Carolina and other places. If I wasn't thinking about it, I'd probably talk to you like this, because I grew up for a long time about an hour below Alabama. and he was like, ah! But then we did it, and that first session was essentially an ADR. They had scratched it in. I think Swampy had scratched it in because he's, you know, he's got pretty good facility with an English dialect, which is an amazing safety net when we do the sessions, because I know that I can trust him to call me out if I make mistakes or if it sounds wrong to the ear. That trust is just so helpful.
Absolutely. So I take it it was probably a lot of fun working on that. You know,
oh, my goodness.
Were you familiar with the character, with Phineas and Ferb beforehand?
I was. I got turned on to the show back in 2012. I was doing a production of a show called The Happy Elf in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. And The Happy Elf was written by Harry Connick Jr., and we got to work with him, which was fantastic. And a little bit of trivia. In the animated version, the character I played of The Happy Elf, Yubi, was played by one of my idols, Rob Paulsen. So that was pretty cool. But I was doing a homestay during this job, and there was a young man there who, it was his home, right? His parents were hosting me, and he was just gaga, over the moon for Phineas and Ferb, and was like, "You have to watch this thing." And I watched it and just fell in love with it. I watched tons of cartoons though, so it's not a surprise that I would love something that is so great. I loved it so much that I actually wound up making Perry my text tone, that little noise that he makes. And it has been my text tone on my iPhone since 2012.
So it was meant to be, essentially.
Kind of, yeah. It was one of those things that, also going back even further, when I was in college, I loved the movie Love Actually. And Thomas Brodie Sangster was the kid in Love Actually, and Olivia Olson was actually the girl that he falls in love with. So it's kind of funny that in Phineas and Ferb, they wound up getting paired together as well as Ferb and Vanessa, at least toward the end of the series. I think that's pretty confirmed.
Cool. Now, one of the other things, you know, we have a lot of people who watch your show who are, you know, very interested in, you know, in your career and the stuff you're doing, but as voice actors, they may not necessarily understand some of the contractual things that have to go on when you're a voice actor. A lot of times it's just a handshake, you know, a virtual one most of the time. You know, it's like, will you do this for me? Yeah, sure, fine. Here's how much I'm going to pay you. I take it you think that perhaps people should pay a little bit more attention to that, and why?
I absolutely do. You know, I can't speak too much to the handshake things. I do think that there are resources out there for like rate guides and things like that. I don't know if you guys give people guidance on that kind of stuff too somewhere, but I know that those resources are out there. But I will say, once you go union and once you're working on union contracts, I advocate to anyone that I know to get familiar with those contracts so that you know what can be asked of you, what you can expect in a session, and you just find ways that you can then advocate for yourself and protect yourself and others sometimes by being intimately familiar with those contracts. I think being educated about what is expected of you, and I think this would go across the board, honestly, is incredibly important. Before I joined SAG-AFTRA, I did a couple of things for friends where I would do a commercial or something like that. And I quickly learned that like I need to establish some guidelines, some rules, even as simple as like pickups will be charged at this rate for blah, so that what I'm not getting is someone writing a version of like an online spot, right? And then having to record five more versions of it because they hadn't sorted out what they were trying to say and not getting compensated.
Right.
So making sure that you sort of get yourself a workflow, right? If you're going to have those handshake deals, make sure that you're not letting people take advantage of you. And make sure that you have something that they're going to have up front and agree to, so that you can point to that when they're saying, oh, but come on, it's only changing like four sentences out of the whole thing. It's going to take you 10 minutes.
Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that does happen. Our friend Connie Terwilliger is always talking about when you're dealing in this situation, always look at ears and eyeballs. Who is it that's watching? Where is it going to be watched? That sort of thing. And really get an understanding for what it is that you're doing and who you're doing it for and where it's going. Is it going to be broadcast? Is it going to be just on the internet? And what are the guarantees that that's where it's going to be and they're not going to take it and put it somewhere else and not compensate you for it?
Yeah. I mean, I lean very heavily on my union for those kinds of protections. I'm somebody who stops doing non-union work just because I couldn't conscientiously continue doing it once I was a member. But I know that there's all kinds of reasons that people do it, and I'm not trying to vilify anyone. But for me, as a military brat, I came up with sort of that structure and the integrity factor really built into me. So with Global Rule 1 stating don't work without the benefit of the contract, I lean very heavily on the union to be like, oh, I don't have to worry about where it's going. If it goes there, also, I'm able to file a claim and maybe get more money if they don't just automatically do it, which is great. But, you know, when you're in those handshake deals, unfortunately, you deal with some unscrupulous people, potentially, and then you have no real recourse.
Right.
And I feel for people when that happens, right? If you're doing something that's non-union and they tell you that it's going to be played in Tallahassee for 3 weeks, and then you wind up seeing it all through the football season being played at every commercial break, and all you got was $200.
Yeah.
That's crappy.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's also important. Perhaps sometimes a lot of people are working with people who aren't really familiar with working with voice actors. And it's incumbent upon us to educate them. Look, if you're going to do this, if you're, you know, this is what I charge. If you're going to rewrite the copy, you're going to have to pay me again. And you're, you know, and that sort of thing. And that does happen. And sometimes they appreciate it. And other times they'll just go find another talent who doesn't know what they're talking about, which is kind of important. One of the other things that I found fascinating, you did we talk about demos a little bit here on the show, mm-hmm. and everybody needs to have a demo, you know, a commercial mm-hmm. demo and that sort of thing.
Don't get it too soon.
But don't get it too soon, which I think is, you know, your point. But you did your own animation demo.
I did. I wound up having a conversation with a director that I worked with a lot in New York. And I said, you're pretty familiar with what I'm capable of. We just did a show where I did three characters for you. If you were to receive a demo from me, what would you want to hear? What kinds of characters would you want to hear from me? And he gave me a list of like, oh, the young dad, the teenager, the fantastical creature, throw in some dialects, da-da-da-da-da. And I wound up writing myself some copy. And while I was doing a production of Avenue Q in Phoenix between New York and LA, I had doctored up my closet and recorded my demo with a Shure PG42 USB mic.
Great mic.
And then brought that over to a friend who has a career in radio in Phoenix. And he basically put music and sound effects to it and just sort of rolled from there. And it's worked for me okay. I mean, I was able to pick up the agency that was my number one choice agency, things like that. But my commercial demo was professionally produced. I've gotten two of those done over time. My big thing for people is really trying to advocate, like, don't rush into it. Don't decide yesterday that you're going to be a voice actor and sign up for the 2-week course that gets you a demo at the end of the course.
Yeah.
Have faith in yourself and your ability to grow, and just take a little bit more time. Take a little bit more time so that you don't spend a crap load of money, because demos are not cheap. And you don't want them to be cheap necessarily. You want them to be quality. You don't need to pay a car for it, but find something that is of a level. Find demos from a demo house that you like. Ask your friends who are in the industry who they refer or prefer. Just recently, I wound up emailing my commercial agent to say, hey, are there commercial demo companies that you love? I've got some friends who are looking to get commercial demos done. And I got a list from him. Then you get people who have experience in the industry, who have thoughts on it, right? But if you jump in premature, or if you give kind of a crappy quality, or not because you didn't try, but because you don't have the knowledge, and that's what you're sending out to people, you might be doing yourself a huge disservice, because you only get one chance to make a first impression.
Absolutely.
And if they hear it and they're like, oh my God, this person is incredibly green, then even if you get remarkably good, you dedicate yourself for 6 straight months to studying every day and studying with the best teachers and reading the best material and listening to the best podcasts and everything like that, and you just rise above, right? You've gone from crawling to sprinting in terms of your talent level. You've got this elephant in the room of that first interaction that they had with you, where they're like, I don't even know if I want to listen to this. It's only been 6 months and da da da.
Yeah. Our guest once again is David Arrigo Jr.
Who talks too much.
Well, that's okay. That's why you're here. You're the star of the show. That's the most important thing. We're here because we want to hear what you have to say. If you've got a question for David, throw it in the chat room right now, and we'll get to that in our next segment. And we can talk about some other cool stuff, too. So stay tuned. We'll be right back with David Arrigo here on VoiceOver Body Shop, and we'll be right back after these messages.
Yeah, hi, this is Carlos Ellis Rocky, the voice of Rocco, and you're watching VoiceOver Body Shop.
Well, hello there. I bet you weren't expecting to hear some big-voiced announcer guy on your new orientation training for Snapchat, were you?
Stick around. You don't want to miss this. Look what you made me do. Power 103.9.
At Target, we want you to come as you are. Be comfortable. Okay, maybe not bathrobe comfortable.
Pants for the customer in aisle 4, please.
Nuevo México necesita un cambio. La representante Michelle Lujan Grisham ha luchado por nuestro estado en la Cámara de Representantes.
Watch anywhere, anytime, on an unlimited number of devices. Sign in with your Netflix account to watch instantly at Netflix.com.
The ice cream maker is a big risk that can have huge rewards. Until you forget to turn it on.
Well, that's it, guys. Time is up.
Hey, it's JMC. Thanks for watching the VoiceOver Body Shop. If you're demo ready or looking to get there, check out jmcdemos.com and see a sample of our work. Now let's get back to Dan and George and this week's Tech Wisdom.
Oh, hi. You know, as voice actors,
We need to hear the clear, transparent, and honest sound of our voices without artifice and affectation. Now, Harlan Hogan's voice-optimized headphones 2.0 provide both that accurate, transparent sound with enhanced mid-range audio, less bass, and the creature comforts voice workers deserve. And then, be one of the best-informed voiceover performers in the universe by getting an autographed copy of VO Tales and Techniques of a Voiceover Actor for free when you buy our acclaimed voiceover optimized headphones 2.0. And here's how. Go to voiceoveressentials.com sales page, click the Add Both to Cart button, and put them both in your shopping cart and enter free book in the promo code field and click or press the Submit Promo Code button. Your discount will appear immediately. This offer is valid only while supplies last, so don't wait. Thanks, Harlan, for creating the best headphones for voice actors out there. Getting into VO is quite an accomplishment. And accomplishing anything in the world of performance can be really tough. Getting great information is tough. Getting the right advice and mentoring is tough. Simply getting ahead is tough. And the best way to get ahead is to simply get started. Let's make it simple. To get started in voiceover, the best way is with VO Hero's free online course, Getting Started in Voiceover. You'll learn everything you need to know to create a successful, satisfying, and profitable voiceover career. The link is really simple. Here it is. voheroes.com/start. Again, that's voheroes.com/start. Get ahead in voiceover simply by getting started. Go to voheroes.com/start.
This is the Latin lover narrator from Jane the Virgin, Anthony Mendez, and you're enjoying Dan and George on The Voiceover Body Shop.
Our guest is David Arrigo Jr., currently starring in the new Phineas and Ferb movie and all sorts of other stuff. Have you done any games? Have they asked you to do any gaming voices?
I have. I did this game with Tom Keegan, who's one of my just absolute favorite directors. I think he's brilliant. Called Archangel VR, and I played the voice of the AI in that game. And that was a sort of model after, Alan Tudyk in iRobot. Am I supposed to have feelings? You know, that sort of AI
that's
who
great.
Winds up learning to become more human throughout the game. That was the fun challenge of Archangel, was that this AI starts out cold. And then because he's mind melded with the player character, he becomes more and more human in terms of his experience in the world. I also did a game, it was another VR game with Tom through Skydance Interactive. Hey, love him. Called Walking Dead Saints and Sinners. If you are a How to Train Your Dragons fan, I was the player character in Dawn of New Riders, I think it was called, which came out for the major platforms, and the character was called Scribbler. And that was a fun one because there were very, very few bits of spoken dialogue. So it was all,
That's the fun stuff in games is like, could you at least like die for us a couple times? It's like,
okay, I was one of the player voice choices for Final Fantasy VII, no, 15's expansion Comrades, which was fun. I was the narrator voice for a Gigantosaurus video game. Over here in the savannah, we finally see all of these dinos. You know, that sort of
fun stuff.
Happy narrator type thing. Yeah. But that was a cool project. I kept seeing Margaret Tang Schaefer, who was the director, do posts of different languages because they translated this thing into, I want to say, 8 or 10 other languages. And so I did the English recording first, and then she would post these videos of people speaking other languages on Instagram. And so I kind of knew what the tone they were going for was because they were trying to match my vibe. But then hearing it in a different language, I just was like, this is neat.
We got a lot of questions here from our vast worldwide audience. You ready to pick on some of these?
Yes.
Okay. George, take it away.
All righty. first one in the queue that our great chat room moderator, Jeff, has put in there is from someone that's got a lot of questions. So we'll see if we can get through all of them. From Nicholas Clements. First one is, how do you get over the stigma of listening to your own voice?
I think exposure, almost like, what do they say? Immersion therapy or what is it? Where if you listen over and over and over and over and over, eventually, I don't want to say you go numb to the problems that you hear, but something is likely to adjust in your brain to where you go, oh, okay, it's not so bad. It's not so bad. It doesn't sound like what's in my head, but it does sound like me and the me that I'm familiar with now. Because the only reason that, excuse me, I assert that the only reason people don't like hearing themselves is because they're so used to a different version that they've got in their brain. So if you can expose yourself to your actual voice as it's heard out in the world, you will start to acclimate. Humans are incredibly capable of mental adjustments, right? And behavioral adjustments even. Look at how quickly people decided they could stay home and it was okay.
Yeah.
At least a handful anyway.
Yeah. It's good to get out once in a while, but yeah, it's okay here.
Yeah.
Another one from Nicholas. Is it more difficult to replace the voice of an already established character, I guess, versus creating a new character?
Yes. I'm not saying that it's impossible, but it is more difficult because you're trying to honor someone else's choices. You're trying to honor someone else's vision of something. And I think that that's really important. You know, when I'm playing Ferb, I'm trying to think, is this how Thomas might do it? And that's why I've watched the series a couple of times, so that I have a familiarity with sort of some of the rhythms, some of the cadences, the pauses that he might make, or, you know, instead of him being like, ow, ouch, is funnier and more in character for him. But if you're creating something out of the ether, if you're the guy, right, the person who comes up and, you know, it's going to be the character. He's going to be like this. You get to do it however you want to do it every time. And it's being informed by your little noggin. You're not trying to match somebody else's version of it.
All right. And that answers Veronica Addis's question, which is, can we hear you speak in characters first?
Oh,
so well done.
Yes.
You've answered questions before they're even being asked a few times, which is awesome.
The perks of talking too much.
Exactly. Another, this one's from Melly Grant. And she, this one's, it's a question for all three.
From Scandal?
I don't know.
it's a character on Scandal. Sorry.
Oh, really?
Right.
Maybe
yeah.
She's messing
the president's
around.
Wife.
Well, there you go. That's funny. And this is something gets a little more, this is techie stuff, but you know, you deal with this as well as everything else. Dan, you've spoken before about studios making crazy demands of their actors, such as Source Connect Pro.
We're going to get into that. Yeah.
And we're going to talk about that later. I've run into a number of projects that only want actors submitting if they're using specific stuff like this mic and this interface. In animation, we do like having a consistent sound across the talent, but how much is too much to ask for a work from home actor? So yeah, we're going to expand on this later, but what are you seeing come at you? And even now that you've been doing this a while, do you get demands that are like, really, you guys, like, seriously, do you get that kind of thing?
You know, I have seen some of that stuff, but I've also been incredibly fortunate that I've kind of leaned into it a little bit. When all of this happened, I purchased a booth in March. This Sennheiser 416 that you see me speaking on was a purchase during this, because for me, I thought commercial is probably going to work faster than animation during this whole pandemic, because there's going to be a lot more learning curve for figuring it out for animation.
So before that, What did you have? What did Before you go that, from to where you have now?
I was in my closet using a Shure PG-42 mic that I mentioned earlier, and I used this bad boy for 8 years. But the pandemic hit, and I picked up the Sennheiser. I picked up a Neumann U87 AI. I picked up an Apollo Twin. I picked up an Advanced Audio CM87 because I was curious about the clones and how they sounded. And by the way, I recorded them side by side and they sounded exactly the same for a $360 mic versus $3,200 mic. But the reason that I made those choices was sort of twofold. They were purchases that I was likely to make eventually anyway, because I like gear. I like to play with stuff. I like to have fun with it if I can justify it. I didn't feel like I could justify it yet. And then, of course, we all started working from home, and I was like, well, I'm going to buy it eventually. I'm just going to go for it. And I'm going to hope that that helps from a psychological factor from the client side, because, you know, we do have places that are sending out auditions that say we prefer a U87 or a 103 for any of our games or whatever, what have you. And I thought, you know, not everyone is as interested in the technology as the guys that are here, obviously so knowledgeable. But some of these clients will hear buzzwords, right? They'll hear Neumann and they'll assume that that's quality, right, whether or not it is ideal for a home setup or whatever. So you're sort of playing a little bit of that psychology. If they're not doing the research to know that you can get away with a CM87, and you can sort of set yourself apart by having the official Neumann microphone, it's an expensive way to hedge your bets, but it is a way to hedge your bets for some of the less educated folks that are actually able to stop you from getting a job, unfortunately.
Right. I mean, I have found that if they said, do you have a TLM-103? Well, of course I have a TLM-103. No, I'm not telling them that it's sitting on a shelf, but you know, it's, they can't tell the difference. And if you tell them, you know, my favorite thing is tell them you have an Alfonso di Credenza and see if that will, you know, like, oh, that's pretty impressive. Cause if it's just the sound of the name of it, then, but if it all sounds the same, who cares?
And anyway, I mean, the time you don't want to fart around is probably if it's like the audio producer from said AAA game, that may be the time you probably get the real thing, right?
Well, I had one game studio that was far more persnickety once they had hired me, and we had to do a lot of adjusting to get them exactly what they wanted.
Yeah.
All right. Jim McNicholas. Now, this is a very interesting question because you talked about this a little bit earlier. It says, for an aspiring voiceover talent, how does one get the initial agent meeting? I usually say, be by making a lot of money. But I take it there's probably more to it than that.
I mean, I think that that's an incredible help, right? If they can look at you and their pupils change to dollar signs, that's going to be a really, really easy sell, right? Oh, yes. You are already working and we don't have to work that hard to get you more work. But if we do, we might get you even more work and we can have money from all of it. That's awesome. But beyond making a ton of money, having a solid body of work, I think can help, because some of the stuff that you can do before you're making a ton of money is reasonable quality, right? And if you've got a few great things that you can mash together and tell them, like, yeah, I did this and I worked with this person, know who's in the industry, establish relationships with people in the industry in terms of casting directors and directors and things like that. And if they can give you a referral, that's going to be one of your best ways to get that agent, right? If you're in a workshop with Colette Sunderman and or Meredith Lane or someone like that, and they say, oh my God, you're really good. Who are you? What agency are you with? Oh, I'm not signed with anybody. Okay. I'm going to make some calls for you. That's where you want to be, because then the agents are going, haha, the person who referred them is that much more likely to hire them, which means we're that much more likely to make money together,
right,
than if it's done in a vacuum and we don't know who you are. And if you don't feel like you could show up and compete in those workshops, then as hard as it is to say, you might not be ready for the agent. Because once you get the agent, you're going to be competing at the highest levels. You want to make sure that when you show up, you are conditioned and you are ready to play in those pools.
Absolutely.
So don't rush it. Don't worry about getting an agent right away. Make sure that you're getting good. And then when you are so good that you are undeniable, when you have that meeting, you know you're in the right spot.
Yeah. We got one last question here from South Africa, where it's very early in the morning.
South Africa. Is that how you say it?
South Africa. South Africa. Yeah. Do you do vocal? It's from Jacques Arendt. Do you do vocal cord warm-ups?
I do. I sing classic Sinatra. There is an album that I have basically used as a warm-up for years. And I used it when I did musical theater, too, because it's easy on my chords, you know. I've got the world on a string, sitting on a rainbow, you know, and I'm just singing along with that. And it's gently getting things moving around in there. And if I know that I have to do a particularly high voice, once I've done about, I don't know, five or six of those songs, I'll switch over to some of the higher musical theater stuff that I know, because a vocal coach named Katie Agresta, who's a vocal coach to rock stars, she was the vocal coach for the guys who did Jersey Boys. When I was auditioning for that show, one of the things that she really truly advocated was know your music backwards, forwards, sideways, upside down, every which way from Sunday, because then you'll know how to sing it if you ever have a problem. And that vocal familiarity creates really great pathways for the warm-up, because I know if I'm pushing in a weird way or what I need to address or things of that nature. So I stick to classic Sinatra, especially if it's just going to be conversational. And if I have to go a little higher, I'll pick some of the songs that I used to use for musical theater auditions that were higher up there. And that helps me to navigate making sure that I'm up and awake.
All right. Well, yeah, you are one intense guy, David. You are a consummate professional, because you're showing everybody that if you want to be in the game, you got to study it. You've got to understand what it is that you're doing.
Go ahead.
No, I was just saying, just quoting that line, work.
Yeah. Angelica. Oh God, somebody ruined part of this for me. Not ruined, but it's very funny. Whenever you hear Alexander say Adam Sandler, and that is a very funny way to listen to the album.
Oh, think Adam Sandler.
Whenever they say Alexander, Adam Sandler, you know. Okay. It's funny, it might ruin it, and I'm sorry if I did for anybody.
You got to work your butt off.
Yeah.
I mean, study, work.
You know, we see it too with various fields in acting, right? People get into it not to be actors, but to be famous. And
that's not what it's about.
You kind of smell those people in the room, right? Because they don't have a respect or a reverence for the work that other people have done to get there, and for the work that it takes to truly get there and thrive.
Yeah.
If you love this, that's the really funny thing. And this was something that I learned in my transition. If you love what you're doing, none of it will feel like work. Everything that you're doing will just be honing tools, developing ways in, developing different approaches to things, as opposed to, I'm not going to lie, when I was doing musical theater, because it wasn't the thing that I was supposed to be doing. Taking a class would have been a burden, right? On my time, on my finances. That's how my brain would have processed it. But everything that I do for voiceover feels like it's what I'm supposed to be doing. You hear that adage in performance, you have to learn to love auditioning. You're full of it. That's how I thought when I was doing musical theater. I was like, nobody likes to audition. You are a confused person. And then I started auditioning for voiceover, and whether it was Check, Gentlemen, for a PayPal commercial, or, well, we're gonna go down there to the moon, or whatever, I loved it.
Yeah.
Anytime I could get in front of a mic, I loved it. And I still do. I get that Christmas Eve feeling when I know I work tomorrow. You know what I mean?
I think of music that way. I came from a music background, but I knew I was not destined to be a music performer.
I've heard him play.
I knew I wasn't destined to be a performer because I didn't have joy every time I picked up the trumpet. I enjoyed it when I was in an ensemble and I got to play with some people, and that was fun. But the guys that I know that are great musicians and translating to voiceover, the ones that love to pick up that horn and wood, what do they call it? Chop wood or woodshed or shed.
Get 10,000 hours
a day. They can't do it. Can't not do it.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
Love something like
that. Well, David, it has been a pleasure having you on the show. I can't wait till we can actually all meet in person one of these days.
But
we're all stuck here in our cages. But thanks so much for being on the show. You've been a great guest and very interesting. And I know people got a lot out of it. And we look forward to having you on again.
Thank you so much for having me. I would love to come back. And I'll be listening for all those tech things because it's worth it, guys. It's another way to learn.
All right.
And you can wind up saving yourself some money.
That's the most important thing.
Let's try to do that.
All righty. All right. We'll be back to wrap things up right after this.
You're watching VOBS.TV. I don't know why. It's crazy what they do here. I think I'm going to go somewhere else and have a cheese sandwich.
As a voice talent, you have to have a website. But what a hassle getting someone to do it for you. And when they finally do, they break or don't look right on mobile devices. They're not built for marketing and SEO. They're expensive. You have limited or no control. And it takes forever to get one built and go live. So what's the best way to get you online in no time? Go to voiceactorwebsites.com. Like our name implies, voiceactorwebsites.com just does websites for voice actors. We believe in creating fast, mobile-friendly, responsive, highly functional designs that are easy to read and easy to use. You have full control. No need to hire someone every time you want to make a change. And our upfront pricing means you know exactly what your costs are ahead of time. You can get your voiceover website going for as little as $700. So if you want your voice actor website without the hassle of complexity and dealing with too many options, go to voiceactorwebsites.com, where your VO website shouldn't be a pain in the you-know-what.
Your dynamic voiceover career requires extra resources to keep moving ahead. Now there's one place where you can explore everything the voiceover industry has to offer. That place is voiceoverextra.com. Whether you're just exploring a voiceover career or a seasoned veteran ready to reach that next professional level, stay in touch with market trends, coaching, products and services while avoiding scams and other pitfalls. VoiceOver Extra has hundreds of articles, free resources and training that will save you time and help you succeed. Learn from the most respected talents, coaches, and industry insiders when you join the online sessions bringing you the most current information on topics like audiobooks, auditioning, casting, home studio setup and equipment, marketing, performance techniques, and much more. It's time to hit your one-stop daily resource for voiceover success. Sign up for a free subscription to newsletters and reports and get 14 bonus reports on how to ace the voiceover audition. It's all here at voiceoverextra.com. That's voiceoverxtra.com.
Hey everybody, it's the time of the show where we get to talk about one of our long-running and great sponsors, Source Elements. The creators of Source Connect and a laundry list of actually other tools that are on their website. If you go to sourceelements.com, create your account. First of all, you got to have an account. Once you have that free account, start poking around on the website. Source Connect is, of course, the thing they're known for that allows you to work with all the best studios and producers in the world from your studio at home. But they have a lot of other interesting tools, including a meeting tool, which is, you know, if you're sick of Zoom for whatever reason, you just don't even like saying the word anymore, they've got a tool in there for free that will do what essentially Zoom does. They have a lot of interesting solutions. But the thing you need to have at this point, if you're serious about voiceover and you know that you're going to be gunning for those bigger budget jobs, very good chance they're using Source Connect to produce that. So they want to record you real time and hear you as you sound right off the mic. And so you got to have that ready and get it going by going to source-elements.com, getting a 15-day free trial. You don't have to buy it right now. Just get that trial going so you have all the machinery in place and the systems dialed in and the Ethernet plugged in and those things, so you're ready to go when the session does pop up. But anyway, we appreciate that support now from Source Elements after several years of their support of the show. Thank you, guys, and we'll be right back to wrap up and tech talk right after this.
Before time began, there was VOBS.TV. Watch or else.
All right, we're back to say goodbye. We got tech talk coming up after this. If you're watching live, we'll have it on for you next week, because next week it'll be tech talk number 41, believe it or don't. Chris, I can't believe it's the middle of September, for crying out loud. It was just May. Anyway, who are our donors of the week?
You got it. Well, top of the list is our old pal, Larry Hudson. Hey, Larry. Natasha Marshuka. I will not get that right, will I? Thomas Pinto, Trey Mosley, Philip Sapir, Christopher Epperson, Michelle Blanker, Antland Productions, Graham Spicer, Michael Kearns, 9499 Designs, that's a Lee Penny.
Yeah.
Shauna Pennington Baird, Stephanie Sutherland, Teresa Daniel, Teresa Daniel, Patty Gibbons, and George Whittam. That's George A. Whittam, my dad. Thanks, everybody. Appreciate that support.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we need to also thank our amazing sponsors like Harlan Hogan's VoiceOver Essentials,
VoiceOver Extra,
Source Elements,
VOHeroes.com,
VoiceActorWebsites.com,
and JMC Demos.
All righty. Well, thanks again to Jeff Holman doing a yeoman's job in the chat room, and Sue Merlino just pecking at that keyboard and making it happen over at the control room, which is about 3 feet from me.
Folks.
And she does a great job at it. We thank her for that. And of course, Lee Penny for being Lee Penny. Well, we're racking up tech talk, so stay tuned for that. And, you know, this is not an easy business, but we bring you great people like David Arrigo Jr. Great advice there. So, you know, you're going to get it here on our show. So that's going to do it for our interview this week. I'm Dan Leonard.
I'm George Whittam.
And this is VoiceOver.
Body Shop.
Or VO.
BS.
Have yourself a great week, everybody. See you for Tech Talk.
Good night.